This is The Record on KUOW 94.9 Seattle News and Information. I'm Bill Radke. The news broke on Sunday afternoon. In an apartment in northeast Seattle, two police officers shot and killed a woman. That woman, Charlena Lyles, had her children with her. She had a knife. She was black. The officers were white. Since then, local and national media have covered this story, some linking it to the police shooting of Philando Castile, a black man in his car in Minnesota. My next guests, Ijeoma Oluo and Eula Scott Bino, have been talking about the Charlena Lyles shooting. Welcome to both of you. Thanks for coming in.
Oh, thank you for having us.
Thanks for having me.
Ijeoma, you keep coming back to the fact that both Philando Castile in Minnesota and Charlena Lyles had children with them. What does that say to you?
You know, to me, it kind of reinforces that our children don't get to be children.
Right.
They're given less care, less concern, and the amount of emotional turmoil that this puts on them, that someone wouldn't pause and think there's a baby in this car or there are four babies in this house before opening fire, I think kind of reinforces, you know, this is why Tamir Rice was shot as well, because our babies don't get to be babies. And it makes me look at my kids and wonder, you know, when are they going to be allowed to goof off? When are they going to be allowed to make mistakes when they can't even be, you know, bystanders without anyone noticing them and noticing they need protection?
Will you say a little more, Ijeoma, about childhood? Because I assume an officer would be equally reluctant to harm any innocent bystander, child or adult. But say more about how this, about black childhood.
You know, I think a lot of it is the fact that we simply don't see black children in our national discussion. We don't see them on television. They don't get to be children, right? We see poor, tough black boys in these weird fictionalized gang scenarios and things like that. But we don't get to see the nuance of children the way we get to see white children. Our children are looked at as dangerous. They're looked at as tiny adults. They're looked at as future criminals. And it is so painful to see, to look at like my boys and notice, you know, how quickly people seem to be threatened by them. And even when you look at the language, like around the shooting of Tamir Rice, how often the spokespeople for the police said this was not a boy, this was a 12-year-old boy,
right?
And regardless of his stature, regardless of his size, he was a child, he was a baby. And our children just don't get to be, you know. I hear a lot of stories from my white friends of all of the mess ups they did, all of the fun pranks they played as teens. Our children don't get to be that. You know, it's hard enough just hoping that your parents are going to be able to raise you in this system if you are a black child. But then to also know that, you know, our kids can't be impulsive like other kids. They can't act out like other kids without being seen as a deadly threat. There's so little concern given to them in this country. And I think this really reinforced it. I cannot imagine a scenario where you would think that it would be preferable to open fire in a small space like a vehicle or open fire in a small apartment with four children in it.
Eula, you've been thinking about all of this.
Yeah, you know, everything you just said was just hit home. It's been studied that we black boys especially are seen as older, just like, you know, a 9-year-old boy will be assumed to be 12, a 12-year-old boy will be assumed to be 18, kind of thing. And so that, I mean, just everything you said in terms of they're not allowed to have this time to be young in the first place is wild. I don't know. I'm struggling now because I'm pregnant. And so we're not finding out the sex, which is, you know, fun. And I feel like some people are like, oh, I couldn't wait. But there's a real mystery that I get to live in because I have no idea if I'm having a black woman or a black man. And either way, it's really scary. But not knowing means it's like I can't picture any part of it yet. Right. Like it's a nice like safety shield for myself, because I think if I knew I was having a black son, I would worry about all of those fears. And if I knew I was having a black daughter, I was worried about all those fears. And they all cascade when they do. But it's interesting to be able to kind of disconnect in the meantime and just say, like, I don't know what's happening in there. I don't know what's going on.
That's hard to hear about all that there's all that fear.
Oh,
in
so
you.
Much. I early in my pregnancy, I was really struggling with just like keeping my head above water. And I had one of those calls from insurance company where they're asking a bunch of questions. And I was saying, you know, yeah, I'm pregnant. And the woman was saying, oh, you know, how are you doing? But, you know, they always ask, too, if you're depressed. And so I was saying, yeah, I am depressed. Like in being pregnant and like knowing I'm going to have a black child, that's kind of scares me. And she was so well meaning over the phone. She said, you know, but if you raise them right, they'll be fine. And I had to like stall her and say like, no, just so you know, like the chances of me doing everything I can to get them in the right place and put them in the right position in society does not in any way guarantee their lives being saved by any chance, right? So as well intentioned as her statements were, it was like, you're literally not helping. And the only thing that will help is if white people start talking to each other. And I don't know, I've really lost faith in the fact that they're gonna put themselves in that uncomfortable place, right? I think that one of the hardest things that I deal with is when I can see how race is uncomfortable for people who do not exist constantly in the concept of race. On the other hand, it's uncomfortable for us too. And it's weird to me that people don't think it is. I think they think like, oh, but you guys are dealing with it constantly. It's your thing. It's like, no. I'm stressing. Whenever race comes up in a room, I'm sweating just as hard as you are. I wish black people could blush brighter. Because then they would know just how uncomfortable we are in all these situations. But I think because white people really, I mean, they do show their red, they do feel more uncomfortable. They are, you know, they think that we're not the same in those aspects. And we're not the same in a lot of ways with how we're treated in this country. But we are the same when it comes to like our goals with our family. Like, oh, all I want is this kid to be safe, man. And to play and to have so much fun. Yeah. And then to make a bunch of mistakes.
Yeah. Yeah. Ijeoma, you said that you've seen people feel threatened by your kids. What do you mean by that?
Yeah, I mean, for a lot of it too was just reminding people the actual age of my children. I have tall brown boys, and especially my younger one, who's a little darker skinned than my older kid. I remember 6 months in through him being in preschool, and his birthday came up, and I said, oh, he's turning 4. And they were so shocked. They had been operating under the thought that he was turning 6. Mm-hmm. And they had been disciplining him accordingly and expecting things of him accordingly. And so then they were looking at his, little outbursts, if he threw a fit for the day, as him being like a disobedient black boy.
Is that on file?
No. And it was one of those things, actually, where it was so bad that a staff member actually called. She was friends with my sister and called my sister and said, you need to get him out of here. He's being really isolated and picked on as the only, brown boy in this class.
Yeah.
But, our kids aren't allowed to be upset by anything. They're not allowed to be angry about anything without it being shown as like a chip on their shoulder. And, their size, people assume that they are more physical. And studies have shown, too, that even when they take like elementary school teachers in the room and they watch young boys at play, they will identify the same playing behavior from brown and black boys as aggression and fighting that they would, deem to be playing amongst white boys. The truth is that, our boys, they get a little rambunctious, and our girls too, and they're viewed as being violent and being disruptive. And I have to watch them, and I have to constantly try and find spaces where it's safe for them to run around and be kids, and then also be really, really cognizant of like, you can't do that here. You can't jump around. You can't roughhouse with your brother here. It's going to look like you're in a fight.
Right.
And people kind of clutch their pearls. I've got two boys 6 years apart, and they do that wrestling, pushing out of the way thing. And I see the look on the faces of white bystanders like, is this going to be a brawl? Is this going to be a thing? Whereas, if you saw two brothers playing together of any other race, you would be like, oh, look at them. That's adorable.
Or it's annoying, but you would never think
that. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Eula, you've said that we started off talking about shootings in Seattle on Sunday and at others. And you said that regarding Charlena Lyles, who died on Sunday, in Seattle, you hope her children leave Seattle.
Well, I don't know if I hope they leave. I was just saying how so often what ends up happening is we do migrate away from where, tragedy has happened and healing hasn't been allowed to happen, right? Hmm. So something as scary as the people who are literally, the SPD is such a close to home thing. I was telling my husband today how, it's not Fife County, it's not Tacoma, it's Seattle. It's like the main, city. And so if these kids are being raised with the mindset of like the guardians of the city killed my mother, and if they don't get enough counseling in the meantime between, now and the age that they're able to get out of here, I would get of age and go. I mean, I would probably get of age and say, this is the one place where I, whenever the police show up, I'm going to always have the remembrance that they are here to harm rather than help.
Ijeoma, you used to live in that complex where Charlena Lyles died.
Yeah, I did as a kid. So it was really, to me, it was very visual because I know what the buildings look like. I know what the grounds look like. And also, I know how many children are there. Mm. And to think about what it's like to finally get maybe a little more stability, especially because Solid Ground is a place for people, for families that were formerly homeless. And, it's for places, people with children.
This is that transitional housing.
Yeah.
Solid Ground.
Yeah. And to know that there are that many children there, that this happened in their home. where they were finally maybe starting to feel really safe. And now there's reporters flooding the area. They've got people going in and out. And I know that that area, at least when I lived there too, had a very strong police presence, police rolling through there all of the time. And that likely is still the case. To know then that that's going to be a recurring trauma for those children who, you know, knew Charlene, who knew her children, it just absolutely breaks my heart.
Mm-hmm. I talked yesterday on the air to a Seattle police officer who's also a state legislator, a Republican state legislator. He lives in Enumclaw. And he said a couple things. He said that the social service system failed Charlena Lyles, and he's called for more funding in Olympia. Yeah. He also said, though, that he didn't think race was a factor in this shooting, that these were officers threatened by knives in just a few seconds, a few heartbeats, as he put it. What do you think about that?
I mean, I don't believe that. I listened yesterday, so I heard him say it, too.
Okay.
I think the hard thing is I watched the video, you know, of them and the audio of them kind of going into this facility. And it has to put your brain into a different space when you're going in knowing all of the history behind her situation to begin with. And you...
For people who don't know about her history, are you talking about that she had mental health treatment of some kind, and she had a pair of scissors that she brandished at officers in the past.
Right, right. And so walking into that, they're talking about how she had scissors last time, how things had escalated before, and how she ended up in the position she was in. And then all I can think is I can imagine them thinking in the car, if that was a woman, a white woman the whole time, how do we de-escalate the situation knowing that in the past she's been this upset? Right. And how do we figure out how to, you know, properly navigate the situation so that, you know, that we don't get the worst outcome from this? Because, I mean, she's a mother. She's in there with her three kids. We want to make sure that she's OK. And so when we have that conversation with leaving out the word black, it's like everything says go in there cautiously. But then when you think black, it's like, OK, so this is just some person. This is just some, you know, I use the N-word too much, so I'm not going to do it now. But this is just a black person who's inside, kind of like she's back and forth. They have their issues. They have their traumas. They have their problems. It's their thing anyways. Let's just go and, like, get it over with. Right? That's a different mindset to walk into. So to say race doesn't play a role, you walked in with the mindset of, like, the worst thing could have happened, and it did, and it's not the worst thing in their life that they could imagine. I always feel like, yeah, it sucks for officers. They killed someone. Like, that sucks. You also signed up for a job where you would get to carry a gun and kill people.
Yeah. Well, it might be the worst thing that happened to them.
I'm never going to be a police officer. Right. I would hate the idea of having a gun in my hand and an ability to make a bad decision like that.
I think it's important, too, to remember that we have to get away from this mindset that it's either cops or civilians, right? You enter into this job knowing that, you know, it should be that your ultimate goal is to protect the civilians that you encounter. And especially because she called them in.
Yeah.
And instead, it is this, oh, what if she got violent against you? The truth is that is a bit of the risk you sign up for. We don't live in a world, and we like to act like we live in a world where it's one cop getting killed for one civilian getting killed, but we don't. We live in a world where it is one cop getting killed for eight civilians getting killed. Those were the numbers from last year. Mm-hmm. So we don't have this. It's not nearly as, oh my gosh, if I take a little time, you know, we're going to have this slaughter of police. What we have right now is really a slaughter of civilians.
Yeah.
And 50% of black people killed by police also were in mental distress or had a mental disability. And people not being trained, people who can't see the humanity of black people who are already predisposed to view black people as threats are going to view black people acting erratically in any way as an even greater threat. And the truth is that they are humans and they're scared. You know, I live in the North Seattle shoreline border. And 2 years ago, one of my neighbors, a white woman, was in distress. And she was out in the street as I was walking my kid to the school in a bathrobe with a sword, a real sword. And she was attacking the street. She was attacking fixtures. She was yelling and swearing. I hesitated as to whether or not I was going to call the police because I was like, okay, this is a right. sword. This is dangerous. But I don't know if she is more or less dangerous than the police I'm calling in.
Yeah.
But my white neighbors had no such hesitation. Before I could even decide, the cops were there. They talked her down. She put down the sword. They got her into her house. They had her take some meds. They had her take a nap. And then they literally picked the sword up and put it back in her house under her couch.
Oh.
I asked them. I said, why are you giving her back a sword? I'm like, I'm really glad this ended peacefully.
Yeah.
But also, can you please not give her back the sword? And he said, well, it's her property. she's not going to hurt anyone. She's more scared of you than you are of her.
No, she is. Yeah. She is more scared of your
black, she is.
Your black body than
she is. That's the sort of care that is not given to black people acting erratically or in any sort of crisis in any way. I cannot at all imagine that scenario in any police force in America turning out the same way for a black person. And that frightens me because we do live in a country that is underfunded for mental care.
Right.
We do live in a country that does not understand disability and the way people act with disability or in mental distress. And then we have police officers who have this ingrained fear of black people. You can say you were afraid for your life,
mm-hmm.
but if you don't examine why you were afraid for your life when you aren't in other situations, then you're part of the problem. It is not, fear of black people is not justification for murder and for killing someone if the only reason for that fear is that they are black people.
Yeah.
And if you would react differently, and if you have reacted differently in other situations, you need to investigate why. And this is endemic throughout our police force. It's the culture.
We started off talking about your families, about the fact that you're a mother-to-be. Do you want to end with, is there a conversation you're having within your family that you want to share regarding these shootings, regarding their future safety, all of that?
So for me, I would like rather recommend to other people, because the thing is, I'm going to raise my child as best I can with the mindset that I can only keep them safe when they're within my grasp, and you know, I'll try to make a home where they can only party at my place, so they don't have to walk the streets and be in danger constantly. Because that's how it feels, you know. I worry about
you're going to host the parties.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I think most black people who have the ability to will, because they worry that their children will go out and bad things will come their way. Because even if they're black with a mainly white crowd, they're still going to be the one that ends up in trouble at the end of the night. But there's this great podcast called "The Longest Shortest Time" that has an episode that's titled "How to Not Accidentally Raise a Racist Kid," something like that. And it does a great job of talking about how we as a society, especially white people, need to talk to their children more about race as early as they possibly can, because kids learn from your silence. And the more we don't talk about our differences, the more they make assumptions of what things are supposed to be. The same way, if we don't, you know, if we don't get break down what the difference is between a boy and a girl, they start to make up things, right? Like, I can think of a girl that's like, boys don't wear pants and it's our skirts, and it's like, no one's told you that before, but you've decided that because you've seen people not wear skirts, right? And then you might decide too that black people don't deserve safety, because even though nobody talks about it, everybody, you can see how they're not safe, but based on the news and that kind of thing. And so then we accidentally end up with these people that are exactly the same as the last generation. The last generation didn't care whether or not we lived or died. So I'm hoping people will listen into that podcast, but also think more about having the conversation. And if it makes you uncomfortable, that's okay. Discomfort will not kill you.
Ijeoma, any final thought?
You know, I think it's just really important that we take time. If you start to get your hackles up listening to this conversation and think, these aren't the police I know, this isn't the society I know, this is the police you know, this
yeah.
is the society you know. Our society has always had two realities based on race, and that they exist at the same time. So the officer who is nice and courteous to you that you look at for protection is the same officer who will view any sort of, you know, even just slight backtalk from a black civilian as a threat. These are the same people, because we have grown up in a society that says that black people are volatile and are not as worthy of protection. They're dangerous. They will hurt you if you let your guard down for a second. And a society that says that white people in America deserve to be protected. These are the same realities. These are the same people. If it makes you uncomfortable, you need to investigate that. Look at the history of the police in this country and look at our society and how it functions.
They were created just for us.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, just for us. It was like slavery ends. We got to figure out how to keep these Negroes in line. We should create a system to do that. Oh, police. Before that, there, you know, when you watch an old Western, they have, bailsmen. What are they called?
Bailiffs
and things like that, because you would just send one person out to go hunt down one bad guy, and they would get, you know, they would cash in for the prize. Then slavery ends, and it's like, we have to figure out how to monitor these people. They're wild.
We'll pause there. We talked to a Seattle police officer yesterday and a Republican state legislator about this. We talked to the former chief of police of this city. If you're a police officer listening, we'd like to talk to you too. We've been having this conversation with Ijeoma Oluo, editor-at-large of The Establishment, and Eula Scott Bino, one-third of the podcast Hella Black, Hella Seattle. It's good to see both of you again, and thank you for this very much.
So glad to be here.
Thank you.
It's The Record on KUOW 94.9 Seattle. We'll continue in a moment.